F4.
Number 19B.
Now, having given example, he goes on and stays with that case of the blind man being healed, but he doesn't leave just the healing as it is. He was now healed, but now he goes on and says, now I want to tell you what is necessary for such a Christ consciousness that is able to heal. And so we have another aspect of it. We come to the subtone of the Christ, of that complete unity with the Christ idea alone saves. So it is not just a mystical Christ that saves. Jesus had to be one with that Son of God. You see, he accepted at the end of that story, he accepted, I am the Son of God. He accepted his unity with the Son of God. And only that unity is really saving. If we are only talking about the Christ, this will do nothing. We have to be one with it. We have to enter into that Christ consciousness. And therefore he takes that symbol of I am the door. So he is talking about that the Christ is the door. Well, that seems to be a far-fetched symbol, but it is only a far-fetched symbol because we are not acquainted with the culture of that time, because we are not acquainted too much, really, with the Bible, because we know that in the city four square, there were not only four walls, equally long walls, but there were always, in every wall, there were doors. And the doors were opening within and without, and you can go in and out. Which means that those doors were a symbol of the Christ, meaning you have to go into the city in order to be the city. You can't go around the city and say it's a wonderful calculus. You have to be one with that calculus, and in order to be one with the calculus, you have to go through the door to be in the city. And only when you are in the city, you can look out of the doors and see that that Christ idea has an impact on the whole world and on every situation, just as it had on the blind man. But he shows here that you can't do that without first being at one with that calculus, with that Christ. You have to go through the door. That's why he said, I am that door. I am that Immanuel sense of things. I am making myself one, and I don't anymore like to be outside. There is no outside, he said. There is only the center and circumference of being. So he shows that with the door through which the sheep goes when they at night when they go into the sheepfold. I read it rather quickly because it's an easy subject. He says, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. You see. He calls those others a thief and a robber. Everyone that tries to solve a question without the Christ consciousness is robbing ourselves of our Christ manhood. He's a thief. He robs himself. So it is similar to the whole epistle of the Galatians that Paul wrote. That whole epistle of the Galatians was always saying that the Christ is self-sufficient. You don't need anything besides the Christ. Don't think that the Christ is just one way of handling a situation, but you can also handle that situation in another way. So it is the self-sufficiency and the all-sufficiency of the Christ that is shown in Galatians. And here it is just shown in a few words that there is no other way. There is no other way of salvation. Whoever wants to go another way of salvation must know that he robs himself of the most precious thing that he has. So But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. Only he is the shepherd. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice. Only those hear his voice. Then they can be healed. If they are not receptive and don't hear the Christ voice, the Christ hum, then they don't hear it. And he calls this, and he calls his own sheep by name and leadeth them out. He goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. So only when we are going through the door, we are really the Christ idea, and that Christ idea is heard by the sheep. They follow that voice. Think of it, if we would go home and would make up our minds to be a real Christian scientist, to be a real Christian as science, and entertain the consciousness of love and mind, and no more accept that there is anything going on but that the fulfillment of love, the plan of love, lies on its object and of its manifestation. That only the plan of love really blesses the whole universe, and nothing else is going on. And that if we have that attitude, then we are the shepherd that is going through the door. And the sheep, the world, will hear the voice of the Christ. They will respond to that Christ calling. They may respond in a way that they not even know that this is the Christ calling. They will be moved by some kind of an occasion, by some kind of a thought, by some kind of an inspiration, but through some kind of activity, through some kind of insight, they will be moved to do something which is in the plan of love without that they know it. Without that they know it. They don't even have to know it. The main thing is that we entertain a consciousness of love and mind, and that that forms, so to say, a realm of the universe, a field of the universe. It isn't that we entertain it and then we have to throw it to a situation, throw it to that situation, and now this has to be corrected. It's much bigger than that. It's much bigger than that. Love and mind. Love is dwelling in the realm of mind, and mind is all in all. So in that way we would be the good shepherd and have gone through the door. Then 7, he says, I'm the door of the sheep. I am the door. I'm that unity, I'm that threshold, so to say, which leads us into the city, which makes us one with the city, which makes us one with the divine infinite calculus. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers. Can you see how the Jews were up in anger to say, all that came before me, before Jesus came, there was a Abraham, there was a Jacob as well, there was a Moses, there were the prophets, and he said they were all robbers and thieves, because they always put the salvation into the future. They never went through the door. They were always outside and said, there is a city, and there is a wonderful city, but I stay outside, in the outer court. They were not allowed to go into the inner court. Can you see why they were robbers? They robbed themselves of being one with God. They couldn't say, I'm the door. So they were thieves and robbers. So again in 9 he says, I am the door. So he repeated it, so that we really know what he wants to say. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved. He shall be saved. So only when he enters in, he shall be saved. As long as he is outside and just looks here and there at the door and then goes on and is still outside, he's not saved. He doesn't make himself one with the calculus. Yes, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find postures, you see. Then he finds postures. He can go in and out and in and out. He can go in and be one with God. He can go out and translate that oneness outside and translate it and translate it to the world. We have that one, that going out, really, you can take as the Christ order. That Christ order of principle, life, truth and love, soul, spirit, mind. That's the going out of the Christ. That goes from the principle out and translates itself to the point of our infinite idea. Gosh, can you see if we would have 2 weeks' time, I could elaborate on that, and you would feel, my word, what a time we go through. What a vision we get here. That we begin to work always in categories of being. Not in a door that opens up and goes out. Ah, yes, the sheep goes out and trots out. And here and there the sheep trot in and go in. That's not the thing, huh? It's those categories that are explained. Yeah. Then in 10, I am come that they may have life. See, now he says again, what is his mission? Now, my mission is that I am come that they might have life. And life is in the Greek Zoe, therefore capital L, life. The life of God. And that they might have it more abundantly. They can go in and out. They have it more abundantly. Wonderful. Then he goes on, still trying to show how he has healed that blind man. They come to Christianity. Now he says, I'm the good shepherd. So first he said, I'm the light. That was the first one when he was healing. I'm the light. Then that was the word. In the Christ he said, I'm the door and I go through the door. And now in Christianity he says, I am the shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for his sheep. Now comes another attitude. Now he can show that it needs complete consecration for this life. That he gives his life for it. That he lays down all false concepts in order to be the door, and in order to go through the door, and in order to be the shepherd in that realm. 13, the hireling flees. He said, if the wolf comes, the hireling flees, because he is a hireling and cares not for the sheep. You see, he gives here now a sense of full consecration. First that he says, I give my life for my sheep. I give my life for the idea. The sheep is standing as a symbol for the divine idea. So I give my life for the idea. Not my life, capital L, but my mortal life, my human life, I lay down for the sheep. Not only that, I'm a good shepherd. I'm not a hireling. I don't run away when I are faced with any opposition. When the wolf comes, I don't run away. Only the hireling runs away. But I'm not a hireling. I care for the sheep. I care for the idea. And if I see any danger for the idea, I stand to this idea. I stand and stand and stand and stand for the idea. I'm not running away. He knew that he had to handle the wolf, animal magnetism. That he had to handle that animal magnetism. So, without really seeing right through the claim of animal magnetism as nothing, not as a power to be feared, if he handled that animal magnetism from a standpoint of love and mind, it is a joy to handle animal magnetism. I just see the Christian scientists, especially in the movement, they are afraid of animal magnetism. The moment you call animal magnetism, they just shudder, are afraid of it, and don't stand to the idea because they are afraid they could be put under the claim of animal magnetism. No, if you have love and mind, it is a joy to handle animal magnetism. Think of the joy you have. There comes along animal magnetism, the wolf comes and you don't run away, but you say, hi, hi. Hi, hi. What do you think you are? What do you think you are? You little naughty little thing. You are nothing. And I tell you why you are nothing. And then just take my book on animal magnetism with those 7x7 wonderful laws how to handle from the point of view of love and mind animal magnetism. And you just rob that wolf of anything he has. Of his hair and of his skin and of his bone and of his flesh and of his eyes and of everything until he disappeared. Not even the grin will be left over. Like with the Cheshire cat. Not even the grin will be left over. Yes? This is a joy. Can you see why he started out with that blind and says, that's not because there is a wolf there that I have to conquer. It's not that the parents have sinned. It's not that that men have sinned. Not at all. It's for the glory of God. To show the works of God that I do the works of God. That's all there is. Is it such a fearful thing to do the glory of God? To do the works of God? Isn't that a joy? It's a terrific joy. You handle animal magnetism perhaps the way I've shown you in my book, Animal Magnetism, that those laws have saved my life. I wouldn't be here anymore without those laws. Never. But I wasn't in danger from animal magnetism. I was always standing above it. Always. You think how people are afraid to be excommunicated. This is child's play. You know, this is child's play. What is it to be excommunicated from the Mother Church? This is nothing. There is no power in it. There is no substance in it. There is nothing in it. You are one with God. Think of the power, the authority we have being one with God. To enter into the city and say, I am the door. I'm not only the door, I'm even the shepherd of that door. I can even handle the wolf therein, so that he cannot enter, so that animal magnetism cannot enter. And so we handle really animal magnetism from the throne of grace, and not really from the pitfall into fear and anxiety, not from that standpoint. So handle it, handle the wolf. And we have to handle that wolf or we are not a good shepherd. We have to shepherd that idea. We have to shepherd the idea of science. And whoever doesn't stand up, I would say so, whoever has seen the idea of the science of Christian Science and doesn't stand up to it is a hireling. Is a hireling. And he flees when the wolf is coming. So he saw that. Where was I? 14. I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep. I know my ideas from... Can you see shepherd, love? Know my sheep, mind, love and mind. I'm that attitude of love and mind. And the Father knows me. Think of it. The Father knows me. What do we care how people know us? If they think we are no good or if they think we are good. It doesn't matter what they think of us. The Father knows me. You go into the world and don't fear. Because you know that God knows you. And if that is not enough for us, well, then we are no good. Then we are not worth the cheese we eat. And other sheep I have. Now he makes it even more universal. I hear other sheep, namely he has also those that are not in Palestine, those that are in the diaspora, the whole universe. That's my sheep, because the idea is universal. And other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. Can you see he brings it all together into the oneness of being? Love includes all ideas. So there is just one love that we shepherd. And look here what he says. Therefore does my Father love me. Only if we handle animal magnetism, the wolf. Only if we are not afraid of animal magnetism. Only if we don't run and forsake the idea because of fear. Only then, he says, the Father loves me. Only then the Father loves me. If we run, he doesn't love me. Because I lay down my life, my interest, my self-interest, my personality, I lay it down my life, that I might take it again. And that's very interesting. I lay down my life, that was life as psyche, not as Zoe. And I take it up as the true life. I find only my true life if I give up my false sense of life, my mortality. I cannot put on immortality if I don't first put off mortality. No man taketh it from me. Can you see this terrific authority he has? No man taketh it from me. Says, no man can take my life from me. But I lay it down of myself. I'm in command of the situation. I'm not going to be pushed around by people or by an organization. I'm not going to be pushed around. I do it myself. I'm in command of it. I define what I lay down and what I take up. I lay down my mortal sense of life, and what I take up is my divine sense of life. He's in command of it. I have power, he says, to lay it down. He has the power to lay it down. And I have power to take it again. Terrific. This commandment, can you see it again at the end of it? This commandment have I received from my Father. So since we started out with Christianity, we begin to hear what John was saying, what was the Father's commandment to Jesus, what he should accomplish. He tells exactly what. So here we have this wonderful sense that the commandment of my Father was that I have to lay down my personal, selfish, egotistic sense of life or of man. And I have to take up on the other side my true sense of man. Yes? Then he goes on to a last point to give this touch of science, a wonderful touch of science, where he takes everything, so to say, together into the I Am. Our oneness with the divine principle does the work. As I have said, first we have to see I am the door. And so I have to enter in. I have to make myself one with it. When I have made myself one with it, then I have to be the good shepherd. I have really to shepherd that idea and consecrate my life and lay down my life for the sheep. And I have power to lay it down. Because if we see clear enough that we have no other life but that life which is God, as he had said before in the second part, that we have no other life but that life which God has, then I have power to lay down a false sense of life, and then only I begin to see that I enter into the real life, into my real life, only then. Else I'm just trotting along in this world for 70, 80 years, and then I pop off, and that's that. Without mission, without purpose in life, without a name in life, without seeing that we have an eternal life and that we have a preparatory period for that eternal life. So many then said, naturally, he has a devil, and he is mad, and all this discussion went on. And so finally the Jews said, if thou art the Christ, tell us plainly, speak really plainly, spell it out plainly, not without constantly telling other stories. He was very good at that, you know, not to answer questions. He hardly ever answered questions. He always asked them a new question. So, I do that too often. So tell us plainly. Jesus didn't tell plainly at the first. He said, well, the works that I do in my Father's name, they were witness of me. They bear witness of me. You see, he didn't say plainly at first. He said, first look at my works, what I am. And goes on to 28, and I give unto them, to the sheep, eternal life. And they shall never perish, neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand. It gives a wonderful sense that nothing is ever being taken away from us, that no idea can ever be lost in the one love, in that love and mind. 29, my Father which gave me them is greater than all. We can't lose anything by standing up to principle and be one with principle. We think we lose our friends. Well, they are not friends if they can't see the bigness and glory of being one with the Father, then they are not friends. So let them go. Let them go. They are not worth it. So finally, he says, how he says plainly, and he says four things plainly, and John just can't help always explaining something in the four. This is a terror, huh? He always says it right in the four. He doesn't give just a little answer. He said, 30, I and my Father are one. And if my Father and I are one, he says in 36, I am the Son of God. That was plain speaking. And if he's the Son of God, he says in 37, I do the works of my Father, Christianity. And in 38 he says, ye may know and believe that the Father is in me and I in him. Is that not the definition, a fourfold definition of the Christ's I am? Isn't it terrific? Within a few verses he tells them plainly the answer, which they couldn't understand naturally. But he told them plainly. He said, from the point of view of the word, he said, I and my Father are one. Principle and idea is one. From the point of view of the Christ, he says, yes, I am the Son of God. I am the Christ. From the point of view of Christianity, he said, yes, I do the works of my Father. I work works of my Father. And from the point of view of science, he says, and you know, the Father is in me, and I in the Father. Terrific sense of oneness. Huh? Now there is no more a center and somewhere a circumference. Principle is both center and circumference. The Father in me, and I in the Father. God, think of it. If we could entertain that consciousness, just lightly here and there during the day. Huh? Just lightly, only slightly, and begin slightly. To feel and walk around the whole day with a sense, the Father is in me, and I am also in the Father. Is there any occasion for fear, for anxiety? No, just one glory. That's why he said, well, this sickness of this blind man is really here to do the works of God, for the glory of God, for nothing else. And he had a great discussion why he could do that healing, and he showed it through, I am the door, I am also the good shepherd, and I am the Son of God. That's the way I do it. Yes? We make a break.